This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth Pollution Free Radio. Good morning, Dr. Colborn.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. You have long been recognized as a leading authority on the subject of endocrine disrupting chemicals and the diseases caused by exposure. Please introduce yourself for the listeners.
Well, hello, everyone. I am Theo Colborn, an environmental health analyst and president of TEDx, that's T-E-D-X, that stands for the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. We are located in Paonia, Colorado, and if you type in www.endocrinedisruption.org, you will find our website.
Let's talk about bisphenol A and dioxins. What are the scientific facts of in utero exposure and cancer risk for these chemicals?
Well, let's look at bisphenol A first. There are over 100 studies from totally independent laboratories where pregnant female rats have been exposed to BPA at less than one part per million and as low as parts per billion and parts per trillion. And the health of their offspring followed by as the animals matured. Those representing wealthy special interests say that this is junk science, and they keep setting it aside. Yet, this research was done by academics, funded by the National Science Foundation, the National Institute of Health, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and the National Toxicology Program in the U.S., and in foreign countries, funded by their national health programs as well. These university researchers work as specialists with various components of the endocrine system. Some work with the pancreas, looking at diabetes, glucose metabolism, and obesity. Others are looking at the brain and behavior and intelligence, some with thyroid, and others that function on sexual development and others on fertility. But those scientists working with the prostate and the breast have probably come as close as possible to demonstrating that BPA could cause cancer of each of those organs in humans if exposure takes place prenatally. So it's the time of exposure that counts. Using three-dimensional electron microscopy, they have filmed alterations in the construction of the mammary glands in the female embryos and the construction of the prostate in the male embryos in mice, whose mothers were dosed with parts per billion and parts per trillion of bisphenol A. In humans, this alteration in construction of those two organs would start at the end of the second week of development in the womb, long before a woman knows she is even pregnant. They have pictures to show how the BPA alters how cells begin to split and move and form buds, and ultimately the ductile systems, so important in normal functioning breast and prostate tissue. Those working with the breast have even shown alterations in how the fat in the breast is laid down. And in adulthood, the tissues in the breasts look very much like the tissue structure of one of the kinds of human breast cancer. Several years before this, before the breast pictures were taken, a colorful picture of abnormal prostate development in a male mouse as a result of BPA exposure by his mother was displayed on the cover of Nature, a highly respected technical journal. And it is difficult to think of anything that could be more convincing. In terms of dioxin, it has a huge paper trail that dates back more than three decades, and like BPA, affects many vital systems, but it has been linked with many cancers. Dioxin's reputation was not helped when the military finally admitted that the Vietnam ranch hand veterans developed prostate cancer and melanoma in a dose-response manner. As their exposure to dioxin therefore increased, so did their odds of getting other cancers. That probably reflects dioxin's ability to alter the immune system. But the legacy of dioxin we have left for the Vietnamese people and the cancers it has passed on to those born since the war confirms the diverse malignant nature of dioxin. Several studies have linked dioxin with breast cancer as a result of prenatal exposure, which was confirmed by the obvious alterations in how those mammary glands developed when they did biopsies on those tissues. A number of large occupational exposure studies looking at dioxin exposure were able to demonstrate an increase in total number of cancers. So, unfortunately, dioxin does not necessarily initiate cancer, but it works more like a promoter. For example, dioxin was just recently shown to upregulate estrogen activity, causing additional cell proliferation. In other words, dioxin turns on estrogen activity, causing the tissue to replicate itself more rapidly and producing more cells, which is the driving force behind many cancers.
Well, this is very, very important information for Americans right at this time, because we are so hopeful about bringing some changes that could address both the BPA and the dioxins. Right now, here in New York State, the New York State Breast Cancer Network and several breast cancer activist groups on Long Island have been working very diligently to bring about some limited bans on the bisphenol A. They've been successful in Suffolk County with bringing about a ban on the use of bisphenol A in the products that are most close to the very youngest of our society, the sippy cups and the baby bottles. There's supposedly not going to be any more bisphenol A going into those products. And our hopes around the dioxins are here in New York State, we are just about to finally have a ban on the burning of waste in farmers' fields, in backyards. This burning of the dump of the plastic and the mixed solid waste metals that would catalyze dioxin formation, all this terrible mixture of solid waste that is being dumped in the air, so to speak, by burning trash, we're finally going to have a regulation that our Department of Environmental Conservation has crafted and brought through the whole process, and it's just about ready to take effect, hopefully in early October. So we get about a month to wait, and we'll finally have a good regulation to start cutting back further on a significant source of emissions to the outdoor environment of dioxins. And beyond that, we have seen that this whole matter of feeding animal fat to animals, food animals, feeding the hog and the chicken and fish fats to cattle, and then feeding the cattle fats to the hogs and the poultry, this is clearly a way of keeping dioxin levels higher in the food supply than is healthful and higher, you know, than can be accepted. And no matter what the economic problems that might arise from stopping doing this, it must be stopped. And so for you to give us this good science about the connections between dioxin exposure and cancer risk and BPA exposure and cancer risk, I'm sure it will help this progress take place at a faster rate.
I'm so glad to hear that you're working on this. You know, China today has a serious problem with burning of waste and incineration. And a number of studies now are coming out of China. These Asian countries are catching up on basically providing some of this very recent information we have on some of these chemicals. Of course, Japan did a fantastic job of immediately, when they heard about BPA, removing it from cans over there and the lining of food containers. And they saw an immediate drop in the concentrations that they were measuring in human tissues.
Sounds like I had to be getting my canned beans from Japan then. I'm sure I'm getting my dose of BPA. You know, it's just
buy your beans from Japan.
Yeah. I think I'll start doing that.
No, that's terrible. And look at the energy it took to get it here. We're caught in this terrible dilemma. Believe me.
Do you see any connection between exposure to these endocrine-disrupting chemicals, the BPA, the dioxins, and other endocrine disruptors, any connection between that and the breast cancer cases now being diagnosed in girls here in the U.S.?
Well, truly, there's no way that I could say that there is a connection between the breast cancers in men, older women, and young girls, and the two chemicals you just mentioned. The problem, of course, is being able to demonstrate that exposure to BPA took place in a woman with breast cancer when she was in her mother's womb. And this just does not apply. This does not just apply to breast cancers. I mean, making this difficult link or this positive proof of exposure applies to every other cancer and to any one of the other endocrine-related disorders that do not become expressed until much later in life, even though many of the disorders have been demonstrated in the lab to be of prenatal origin. There's no way to go back and test what was in the mother's tissues while she was carrying her daughter and how much of chemical X, Y, or Z she shared with her daughter. And finding the chemical that caused the cancer in the malignant tissue will not work because the cancer started much earlier. So this is something that is difficult to explain. I have found it over the years to those who have developed cancer, they sit and they look at me and they roll their eyes. Or, most important, the parents of children who have developed cancer. So you can see why way early on the endocrine-disrupting chemicals have been called stealth chemicals. We're left with this inability to make a direct link between exposure and cancer and other endocrine-driven disorders. And unfortunately, there are those who are using this lack of this direct association to not take action to reduce exposure to many chemicals that are harmful, outright harmful, like dioxin and BPA. Certainly, no one is going to deliberately dose hundreds of pregnant women with a chemical. That is why at times we must resort to using laboratory animals. And already there is enough indirect information about many chemicals to phase them out, just like you were talking about. Chemicals that can interfere with the system that controls the construction of the tissues and the organs that make our babies and programs how those babies will mature and function throughout life. I just wish we could provide that kind of information, but we can't, and it's because of the nature of the chemicals, and it's because toxicology failed. It let us down.
Well, certainly, people have to use common sense and precaution at times like this. You know, when there is this nearly impossible task of this absolute kind of proof, then people of reasonable mindedness, people that wanted to be able to give their children a future of good health, wanted to be able to have good health themselves, they would not call for this absolute proof. They would be happy to act upon, you know, the best information that's available, considering the matter carefully. And to me, it seems that seeing the predisposition to breast cancer and prostate cancer in the rats and the mice, seeing this earlier and earlier age of onset in the girls and the boys, certainly in precaution and in logic and reasonable mindedness, one would say we cannot risk this. We must take action on dioxins and bisphenol A and these other endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
You're so right. But it's funny, I've sat on many committees associated with endocrine disruption, basically on those committees that were put together by EPA to try to come up with a set of screens and assays. But when you're sitting on committees with people who are representing wealthy corporations who have bottom lines to connect, they will argue that we don't have enough proof yet. And they continue arguing. And they keep also trying to confuse the public, questioning the results, like not accepting all this low-dose bisphenol A research when they determine whether bisphenol A is safe. Those people who are making the decisions are in the positions in government where they are controlling what it takes to remove a chemical off the market. And this has got to change. Something has to happen within the structure of those agencies that are dealing with policy and in Congress? Definitely. We need to see more concern on the part of those who are making the decisions about the laws that they are writing.
The public is in the dark when it comes to endocrine disruptors. These chemicals are everywhere. Consumption of foods contaminated with pesticides, metals and byproducts of combustion, including dioxins and other dioxin-like compounds, as well as breathing indoor air that is contaminated by off-gassing from materials containing these chemicals. These are major exposure routes. If people knew about these sources of exposure, it would be possible to simply avoid exposure in many cases. Government public health agencies have no educational campaigns focused on endocrine disruptors and cancer. The mainstream media provides very little coverage of endocrine disruptors. Why is this happening? Why is this so?
Well, I'm going to take a little time here because I need to go back in time and cover a little history for you just to demonstrate how something like this could happen, how this could take place. Let's go back to 1992. The Chemical Manufacturers Association, now known as the American Chemistry Council, and the American Crop Protection Association, which is now known as Crop Life, began to think about changing their names to look more scholarly and friendly, and were ready and waiting for the first technical book about endocrine disruption to be released. Now, the title of this book was Chemically Induced Alterations in Sexual and Functional Development, The Wildlife-Human Connection. That book came out of a meeting where 21 international scientists from 17 different disciplines met. Each expert provided a chapter for the book, and by the way, only one toxicologist was among them. They also released a consensus statement in which they said that they were certain that a large number of chemicals had been released into the environment that could interfere with the endocrine system, and provided a list of at least 35 well-known and widely used chemicals. Those scientists also said that they estimated with confidence that unless the environmental load of synthetic hormone disruptors is not abated and controlled, large-scale dysfunction at the population level would take place. Now, I know, I was there. Little at that time did they think, or did I think, that within 10 years, the industrialized countries would be facing a pandemic of over a dozen endocrine-related disorders. But back then, word about endocrine disruption soon spread fast across the scientific community to the U.S., Europe, Japan, Asia, Scandinavia, and Korea, for example. And eclectic bunches of biologists, behavioral scientists, medical researchers, and cancer researchers formed these strange coalitions and began to produce more and more evidence that the traditional toxicological assumptions that drove chemical safety testing had failed. They were publishing their papers in a host of journals describing the results of their low-dose testing, similar to everyday exposure, looking at what happens to the developing embryo and fetus between fertilization and birth. The old paradigm and assumptions underlining toxicology were being challenged. Yes, the dose makes the poison, but the timing of exposure can alter how the poison works. And the earlier the exposure, the less of the poison is needed. So many large, wealthy, and powerful corporations were getting nervous about coverage like this. And I'm sure you will all remember the decade where major corporations like GE, Westinghouse, Archer Daniel Midland began producing beautiful TV ads to tell you how they were taking care of you, but never actually trying to sell you a product. They were image building. Then GE bought NBC. Westinghouse bought CBS. Time Warner bought CNN. Disney capped. And Disney capped CNN, and let me go back now. GE bought NBC. I've got to remember this correctly. Westinghouse bought CBS. Time Warner bought CNN. And Disney capped cities bought ABC. Think back to how often anything related to endocrine disruption has ever appeared on those channels. This kind of media capture, controlling the message, now reaches right down to the management of almost every small-town newspaper in the country. And then it did not take long before the fossil fuel corporations could see the handwriting on the wall. Very few people in this world realize that practically every one of the chemicals that have been identified as endocrine disruptors were derived from natural gas, the cracking of crude oil, or the burning of coal. A huge percentage of the consumption of fossil fuels, including natural gas, goes into making plastics, pesticides, and fire retardants. Their endocrine-disrupting chemicals they were producing were coming back to bite them. So around the time when the book I co-authored, Our Stolen Future, was a popular version of the technical book, came on the market, five major trade associations joined forces. The American Petroleum Institute, the American Plastics Council, that now appears to be the spokesperson for the American Chemistry Council, Crop Life, and the food packaging industry started to search for a highly respected international public relations firm to protect their image. Each would contribute $50 million a year to protect their bottom line. And from early on, it was agreed that no one would use the term endocrine disruption. Do not let it become something on the tip of everyone's tongue. Ban it from the English language. If they had to talk about the phenomenon, use the words developmental or reproductive health, but never ED. You have no idea how many documentaries and hour-long TV productions have been made about endocrine disruption and have never been released for public showing. And I think I will stop there. I think that tells you basically what took place.
Certainly does. And I think the short story here with that is just greed. You know, people in their greed and having the wherewithal, having the dollars, the large amount of dollars, the millions that you describe, to get this done, they've done it, and here we are in the dark.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Changes in chemical use policy must be implemented. There's just no doubt about this. Changes that will serve to eliminate endocrine disrupting chemicals from the marketplace. What changes do you recommend?
Well, first of all, we must go back and start over. In 1996, Congress told EPA to come up with a set of screens and assays to detect estrogens in the environment and other hormone disruptors that the administrator chooses to look at. It is now 13 years later, and EPA has failed miserably in many ways, and not one assay has been or test has been released yet. But that's not on the part of those who have dedicated their lives to the agency, but more through political appointments that gave corporations control within the agency. EPA's biggest mistake was to ignore the scientists who discovered endocrine disruption in the first place. EPA allowed corporate toxicologists to move forward using all the assumptions under which toxicology operates, a discipline that let endocrine-disrupting chemicals slip through the public's health safety net. And the assays that EPA is coming up with right now are all based on toxicological assumptions. They're crude, and they're going to miss the boat. It is time to take away from the regulatory agencies the mandate to determine how to test for endocrine disruption. The money and encouragement should go to the only agency in the government today with enough staff that understands the principles of endocrine disruption and the capacity and the track record to move forward. And that is the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Through its extramural program, this extramural program is where they send money out to campuses. They ask for requests for proposals and provide the money on the campuses for the scientists to do the work that needs to be done. And they have a very effective program going there right now that works. So through this program, they can reach out to campuses across the country to cooperate and bring all those endocrine disruptor pioneers into the process. And these are all people working without any conflict of interest. And while doing so, the NIEHS should be given enough money to provide support for lots of undergraduate, graduate, and postdoctoral students to begin to build the army of endocrine disruption trained technicians and scientists to address this very serious public health problem. So it is time to bring together the skills of those pioneering scientists who have built that huge body of data about low-dose exposure using the assumptions under which the endocrine system functions. Using talent like this, the challenge to come up with a comprehensive multiple endocrine system assay is no longer impossible. It's already on the drawing board. We need assays that are going to address the endocrine-driven pandemics that are eating away at the general health of our population. We need to learn more about how a healthy baby is constructed and programmed through the brain and its other organs to be able to function to its fullest potential throughout life. And we need to think in terms of prevention rather than cures and treatment for irreversible health problems that will plague our children and grandchildren and their children throughout their lives. And, quite frankly, to sum it all up, we need a crash program to focus on inner space research, or soon there will be no one smart enough or healthy enough to get us to outer space.
That's well put. I like that. Because that only becomes something that is on the tip of everyone's tongue. That's good.
In closing, I would recommend one way to get started immediately toward a safer world, and so that everyone who wants to make wise choices about what they do, about their exposure, has the opportunity to do so in an educated manner. We can only guess now. We need a federal law that requires full disclosure of every chemical that is used in every product on the market today, including commercial and industrial chemicals, with absolutely no exceptions. And I better close there. I think I probably already said too much.
Well, you said just enough, you know. Just this is, you know, wonderful to have this kind of information to put on the internet and have available to anyone who has an interest. And I'm hoping that there'll be more and more of those that have the interest.
Well, I can't thank you for this opportunity to spread the word. You know, we sit out here in the mountains of Colorado and wonder, you know, how much of an effect do we have? But thank goodness for people like you. It's going to be the people at the grassroots who are going to make this all happen. They've got to start, the public has to start learning to talk to the people they elect and set up communication with the people that they have elected, because industry is, and our representatives are not hearing from us, those of us who are very concerned.
Well, I've been trying. I tried that route, and I'll tell you, I think rather than talking to my elected representatives, I talked to Hillary Clinton about open burning and dioxins and, you know, this problem with the cancer risk that's imposed by exposure to dioxins. I talked to, you know, our other senator, Mr. Schumer. I tried with our lower down politicians, and truly the efforts that I've made trying to change the minds of politicians have not been nearly as fruitful as just educating one person at a time down below. And we're happy to have I'm sure that no politicians listen to our radio program, and I'm sure that gradually more and more of the grassroots are. And I'm really hopeful that something's going to change here.
Well, thank you again for what you're doing. And carry on.
Thanks a lot to you.
Okay.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.